Radio City, John Grayson and Rob Ross at it once again, online, on time, and, you know, just kind of relatively hanging out and being groovy. Rob Ross, Happy New Year.
Thank you very much, my brother. Happy New Year to you. Yeah, you know, you just hit it right out of the park. We are being groovy. We just are groovy.
Yeah.
It's here to groove along in a new year, and we're going into our what will become our third full year on Radio City in a few short weeks. But, you know, it's interesting because it's a brand new year. I don't know about you, but I have never seen so many people at one time be so relieved that a year ended.
Yeah. Oh, I know. No. And it's funny because I was of that same sentiment for obvious reasons. And I mean, like everybody else, you have family that goes through health issues and things like that. And everything seemed to kind of pile up at the end of the year. And it was a rough year all the way around, just, you know, hard feelings and bad thoughts and, you know, just a relatively down vibe. And then it ended up in the last month or two with just getting pounded over and over again. But I was a little surprised to see that many people, as you said, shared my sentiment about 2018, which was effectively good riddance.
Yeah, we all go through our periods of, you know, I always seem to have, and you can take it for what it's worth, these negative cycles, if you will, that happen in a 2-year span, but then the next 4 or 5 years are good. And it just so happens that it balances out that, okay, it's going to be 2 bad years. I can brace myself for the bumpy ride.
Right.
But last year just seemed to have nothing but negative connotations across the board, you know, on the personal level, not for me as an individual personally, but for everyone around me, you know, negative, unhappy, painful, unhealthy things seem to be occurring. And on the universal level, I really do think the world has basically gone insane. This country is beyond maddening and frustrating because no one seems to be able, willingly, to step back and take a breath and try and look at things in an objective eye.
Right.
It's just more finger-wagging accusations, screaming histrionics, and who can outdo the other to reach the bottom faster?
Yes. And that played itself out this week, as a matter of fact. But you're right. We've kind of been leading up to this for a very long time. And it seemed like 2018 was nothing but a step down day after day after day toward getting to where we are at this point. I'm hoping we're close to the bottom.
I would think after watching this week's proceedings and events unfold, the Democrats are definitely going to lead the charge right to the bottom, and it's by their own hand. And as I've often said to you and on this show, I hate it when I'm right.
Yeah.
But with certainly two of the newest members of the Congress, not only do they lead the charge, but it's going to be a very loud "I told you so" from me.
Yep.
Not proudly, but it's definitely leading up to "I told you so, I told you so, I told you so." Because I find it – let me see if I can put this in the right way so we can frame it correctly. We all know I have no fondness whatsoever for Ocasio-Cortez.
Yep.
But, you know, the video that surfaced of her in college, it belies her whole myth that she painted, that she was this poor girl from a struggling family, et cetera, et cetera. But she's acting like the, you know, silly little ingenue frat party girl at Boston College dancing around. You know, that kind of shoots that myth right out of the water, never mind the fact that it was all a fabricated lie. So people made fun of it. And it wasn't just Republicans making fun of it. Democrats who have an overall big picture scope of what's happening to the party itself realize this is a grand mistake. Yes, because she's not a Democrat. She is, you know, one of Bernie Sanders' disciples.
Right.
She is, I'm using the term in quotation marks, social Democrat, which is in effect, she's a communist. And therefore, she is not a member of the Democratic Party. Now, you have – I don't know if you've seen it, but I'm sure you have. There's the clip of her. She's entering the House for the first time, and she does a sarcastic little dance for the cameras to play up the exposed film footage of her from college.
Yeah, to Edwin Starr's War.
Right. You're not cute. You're not funny. You're not charming. You're abrasive, and you really better mind your manners when you're dealing with the House Speaker. I don't care if the House Speaker is a Democrat or a Republican. Know your role, because you're younger.
Yeah.
Well, very basis of everything, respect your elders. And she showed immediately that she has no respect, and she's going in there to thwart everything that the Democrats have been, and I'm using this term very loosely, trying to do in dealing with the Trump administration.
Right.
She and that other new representative, that woman, I'm not sure how you pronounce her name, Taleb from Minnesota, one who just boldly said, you know, impeach the motherfucker. First of all, I don't care what side of the political fence you're on. Show dignity. You just got in there. Show dignity. That's number one. Number two, this is another one who has those wonderful, charming anti-Israel stances and have been very loud. And of course, she's buddy-buddy with Ocasio-Cortez. She's a supporter of Louis Farrakhan. She's a friend of Bernie Sanders. Do we really need to bring out the same shopping list over and over and over again?
Right. Well, and the thing with Ocasio-Cortez is what she's doing right now is she's acting the part. I mean, as we speak right now, the NFL playoffs are going on, and Chicago and Philadelphia are playing right now. We've seen the first three games play out already. But what she reminds me of is the cliche of the hotshot rookie. You know, the kid who comes out of college, has a couple of good games, and starts strutting around like he owns the league after a couple of decent games. And what happens? You know, some giant linebacker hits him in the mouth once, and it's like, welcome to the NFL, kid. That's what she's doing, and it's going to be up to somebody like Nancy Pelosi to say, you know what? I've been here for 30-some-odd years. Sit down and shut up, you know? And they better as hell do it. And that's, you know, the real heart of the matter here is that somebody has to take control of this party and turn it into something other than what it's turning into, which is a bunch of whiny little bastards who can't accomplish anything and a bunch of people who think they own the party after being there for all of 15 minutes. And if they don't do it, they're going to fall apart. They're going to screw up 2020 and welcome President Trump's second term.
And that's what I have a feeling is going to happen, because it's unfolding. It's unfolding. This is the worst part, in a way that we're predicting now. Everything that you and I have talked about over the last couple of years politically has in fact happened.
Yep.
It isn't some great crystal ball that either one of us have. It's just being able to look at the overall scope of it. And with these two, you know, it's just more of the freak show goes on. But what angers me so much is, of course, is the press is mollycoddling and painting certainly Ocasio-Cortez as this precious little, you know, savior and the angel with the machine gun, so to speak.
Yep.
And the fact that right after the football game, of course, that miserable shill Anderson Cooper is going to have her on 60 Minutes. Why are you giving this woman airtime?
Because we can't ever talk about anything that means anything. And going back to Tlaib just a second, and I almost fell victim to this myself, because the first thing that I thought of when the Republicans started corking off about how disrespectful she is and how unbecoming it is of somebody of her stature and all of this crap was Donald Trump himself saying, you know, we're going to tax you motherfuckers 25%, using exactly the same term. But the point is, and this was pointed out to me, and it was absolutely accurate, if he's become the yardstick, then we got big problems. You don't say, well, he did it, so now it's okay. No, he did it, and he's a dumb fuck. You want to be a dumb fuck? Great, act like him.
You're absolutely correct. And that was a part of a conversation that I was trying to have in a rational manner with someone, and all they want to do is just say, oh, you know, it's typical of white men. Okay, well, first of all, just because you're a white woman doesn't mean that the person elected is the right person for the office. That's number one. And number two, you know, all you're doing is playing down to their level, which is what they want you to do. And if you're so stupid that you're willing to take the bait, be my guest.
Yep.
I like the fact, though, that several other senior, which means basically anybody who's been in the office for more than a week, senior representatives did say this is inappropriate, including Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
Here's the novel concept. She brings both of them into her office and says, shut the fuck up and learn. Learn, because that's what this is. This is an education, and you better learn fast, or you are never going to see a second term. And we'll make sure that doesn't happen.
Exactly. And you look on the other side of the attitude from the Democratic Party, and what do you have? The first kind of semi-official candidate for 2020, and it's Elizabeth Warren. And I mean, when somebody in your audience has to explain to you when you're sitting there whining about how I can't control Donald Trump and what he says when he's being a bully to me about Pocahontas, and somebody in your own audience says, yeah, you can. Again, there's a problem there. Why, you know, flex some muscle for crying out loud. Stop with the petty, you know, juvenile garbage that's going on with the incoming class of representatives and take some control, take some ownership and join the fight and enjoy the fight on something meaningful rather than going, he's mean to me and I can't stop him. Yeah, you can.
This is the absolute pussification of the Democratic Party on the whole.
Right.
All of this, you know, stop the bullying, stop being so mean, don't use this term, binary this and you know, female that. And no, you're one political party. That's first of all. So you're all duplicitous taints.
Yep.
That's number one. Number two, no one but no one after all these years already of seeing, hearing, listening to Elizabeth Warren should take anything she says at face value because it is absolute bullshit. She is a woman of zero consistency. She goes whichever way the political winds that will suit her best blow.
Yeah.
Same two goes Kirsten Gillibrand. And notice, that's two women. Not every woman is the right candidate. Obviously, Ocasio-Cortez is not right for anything. She's not even right to be a local dog catcher, you know? Or this Talib woman. You know, this woman's just nothing more or less than another rabble-rousing tool for well, you know what I think about that. But the point is that not every woman is stellar, okay?
Right.
It's that simple.
And think about this. I mean, here are you and I agreeing on all of this, and we're going after these people for their obvious failings, and we're the ones who want them to win. You know, even though both of us is an independent, neither one of us wants to see Donald Trump in office for one more minute. We want them to win. We're just seeing where they're failing, and we can be honest with ourselves and with each other about it. That's what the Democratic Party needs more of, and they have none of it.
The Democratic Party has A, no backbone. B, they don't have anybody that's willing to step up to the plate and just swing the bat. Look,
yep.
I'm no fan of this whole neoliberal Democratic Party because they're too far left leaning. They have no sense of restraint. You can't get from point A to point D without going through B and C first. They constantly forget that. But amongst those that I might think about, and that's a might think about, would be someone like Gavin Newsom, because he certainly proved, I don't like a lot of his policies and a lot of his points of view, but he's also somebody who went from running the city of San Francisco as mayor. He's now the governor of California. He has the credentials. You know, you have to have the credentials. You have to have worked for this kind of thing. And also, he's a governor. You know, give me a couple of other governors and I'm sure – look, I hate him because I live here, but Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah, right.
Certainly. You know, he does some very good, smart things. He's also someone who, unlike his counter in Manhattan, i.e. de Blasio, he doesn't hog the limelight the way that de Blasio does. You know, case in point, when the guy was inaugurated into office, you didn't even see him. There wasn't any media coverage or celebration or any of that kind of thing. It was, nope, I'm sworn in, I got to go to work. And that was it. And that was on a Sunday. So
right. And if anybody could get FaceTime on CNN, I think it's the brother of one of their biggest stars. So he could if he wanted to.
Right. But the thing is, CNN is basically Fox and MSNBC. Yeah. All three are in league with each other and they're all reprehensible because
right.
they don't tell the truth.
Yeah.
It's all fake news. Fake news is not just a Donald Trumpism. Fake news has unfortunately become the order of the day because all of it is slanted and skewed because all you're getting are half stories.
Right. And if you think about it, I mean, 2020 may actually be the best possible time for somebody like Cuomo to make a run at it, because this may be the only time that he won't have to deal with this. But he's a New Yorker crap, because who's he going to be running against? You know, it'd be a little tougher for them to make that case. But that said, it's still a long way off. And the fact that, again, we're starting 2019 by talking about an election that's going to happen at the end of 2020 is a little telling of how just brutal this has all been. And, you know, quite honestly, I realized something this week, And I did something this week that I haven't done anywhere near enough of. First of all, I noticed that I have picked up my guitar and played less over the last 12 months than I probably have in many, many years before. And I stopped listening to music as actively as I had before. And it's because I feel so beaten down and overwhelmed by it all the time that I find myself reaching for it less and less. So I made myself a promise because I realized I was doing something. I realized I was watching this the way Donald Trump wants me to watch it. He wants to be Susan Lucci. You know, he wants to be the bad guy on a soap opera, the one that everybody hate watches so they can finally see him when he gets his comeuppance. And the one thing that all those soap operas have in common is he never gets his comeuppance. You know, Susan Lucci never lost. She was always on top of whatever the situation was. Even when you knew she was just about to get knocked off her pedestal, she won anyway. And that's what Donald Trump wants to be. And I'm not going to give him that this year. I am not going to do it. I'm not going to play this stupid game. I'm not going to watch this crap. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go back to my classic rock and my punk and my 80s new wave. And I'm going to revisit all that stuff. And I'm going to find the stuff I missed. And I'm going to find new music. And I'm going to go back to being me. Because I'm sick of this guy that I've been for the last year. I don't like him.
You know? I want to thank you just now for taking exactly what I was going to go into next, because you said every single thing that I was going to say verbatim, right down to the haven't picked up the guitar and I don't know how long, don't really listen to that much music for pleasure. You know, and I oddly enough, a friend of mine who is a friend of this show actually had posted basically the exact same sentiments earlier today.
Yeah.
Saying that he had felt like it was a case of, am I going to walk away from making music once and for all? Mm-hmm. And he decided to not let that be the case. So my response to him was, you know what? I'm going to take a page from you. I'm taking my cues from you. And this is the year that I pick up a guitar and get back to doing what comes naturally.
Damn right.
Because the thing is, we all became infected with the political nightmare that has now completely taken over this country early in 2015 when that cycle started. It's now early 2019. Here's the antidote to it. Get back to living.
Yeah.
And that includes getting involved and embroiled in, of all things, any kind of quote-unquote arguments with anybody on the likes of social media, because – as we all know, social media means you probably have a bigger dick than you really have, you know? It's the old everybody's opinion is the only one that matters, and don't you shame me here on social media. We're going to call you out. You know what? I'm going to shame you because you're being a bigger tool than everybody else on social media.
Yeah.
If I'm going to go down that route. The thing is, this is the year of no more pulling punches. You know, it's getting back to living for me and not anything else that's going to be extraneous and negative. If I want negatives in my life, I'll create my own chaos. And since I'm not into creating chaos, I'd like to live just a kind of much more upbeat, positive year.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm trying to look at the start of 2019 as indeed being on nothing but positive levels.
That's right. Yeah. If to paraphrase the slogan from the New Hampshire license plates, drama free or die. I'm just not going to do it anymore. Well, this guy, you know, that's really crazy to me to know that you and I and this friend of yours were all thinking exactly the same thing at the same time, because you and I had not discussed that even in passing before we did the show tonight. How weird that we were thinking exactly the same thing.
Well, that's a cosmic thing. I mean, yeah. It's just an undercurrent.
It's just there.
And I'm sure a lot of other people who do creative things or have their pleasures find themselves going, wait a minute. When was the last time I ... insert answer here? I mean, let's put it this way. My fingers are soft.
Yeah.
This is the – and 2019 is the 40th year that I've been playing guitar. My fucking fingers are soft for the first time in 40 years. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. You know, as it is, as we get older, our bodies hurt a lot easier. So it's going to be really painful for me to get back the dexterity that has always been in my hands for 40 years. You know, It is quite a remarkable step backwards that I allowed myself to make. I have no one else to blame but me.
Well put.
And as you stated it, you know, we're not going to give anybody, not Donald Trump, not the Democratic Party, not the political machines, the time of day. What it is time for is to start to let these people all die out, die off, and just basically open the bottle cap so that the fizz comes out and it all goes flat.
Attaboy. Well, with that said, this is the perfect time to get into saying some, oddly enough, getting into some of the sad goodbyes for this week, because I want to talk about, for the first time in this conversation, other than you and me, I want to talk about somebody that I respect, because we lost, unfortunately, three of those respectable somebodies over this past week and since New Year's, starting with Mean Gene Okerlund. And anybody who has ever been a fan of the show of professional wrestling knows the name Mean Gene and knows exactly what he is. But I want to thank, in a strange way, Hulk Hogan for letting us all in on just exactly how amazing a guy he was, how amazing a broadcaster he was, by letting us in on some of the background of their work together. Because, I mean, together they were brilliant. And what he said in a series of tweets this week was that none of that, I mean, we know that all of the wrestling show stuff is relatively off the cuff, but he said every time they were getting set to do a bit, Mean Gene would come up and say, "Hey, big guy, what do you want to do?" And Hulk would say back to him, "Mean Gene, I'm just here to follow you, brother." And they would riff. And that was the magic. And to be able to find that chemistry with anybody is a rare thing. But to find it to the level that they did with each other, and that Mean Gene really did with a lot of people, that's true and inborn talent.
Go back and try and find some of the video clips of when Mean Gene was strictly working with the AWA.
Yeah.
When Ric Flair was at his best. My personal favorite, when he was working, when Mean Gene would interview Nick Bockwinkle and Bobby Heenan.
Yes. I mean, Bobby the Brain. Yes.
Between Bobby the Brain, who's still greatest line of all times, is, "See these wrestling fans? They're allowed to vote and breed." Just totally deadpan, off the cuff, didn't bat an eyelash. I'd have been on the floor wetting myself.
Yep.
If I was there when they did that. But Mean Gene was the perfect wrestling announcer. He had the timing to a science. He knew how to interject. He knew how to fake being scared when you know, the arms would start flailing,
right,
and the tenor of the voice would go up. He mastered it. It was perfect. You know, you had Gordon Solie, who had that dry monotone, "You're Gordon Solie here on Championship Wrestling." Vinnie McMahon Jr. was never that great at it. He always had the Carnival Barker vibe.
Yep.
You know, Jim Ross was just so over the top. But Mean Gene had it. You know what it is? Mean Gene brought the kind of vibe that they used to have on wrestling in the 50s.
Yep. I was just going to say, yeah, back when my hero, Ernie Kovacs, was doing it, you know, when he was doing wrestling announcing on the radio. And it was fantastic. And you're right. He was an absolute throwback to that.
You know, so that's one very, very sad loss. But it also, of course, now, this is the part of the show when we do the sad goodbyes that you have to always keep in perspective. It's just a reality. We're all getting older.
Yeah.
It's not to be funny that we are, but this is a reality. And these are the people that we grew up with, and suddenly people we grew up with are disappearing.
Yeah, and I've said many times before, and you and I have talked about this record specifically, and just about my love for Dr. Hook, and, you know, and everything that they did. But the very first 45 that I ever had, and I spun the grooves off of that thing on the old Columbia Pac-Man label, was a cover of Rolling Stone. And this week we lost Ray Sawyer.
And isn't it ironic? I think it was just the last show, episode 96, in which we were talking about that particular song.
Right.
So, you know, that was a hard one. But we actually got news today that we've lost somebody else who wasn't a giant name. But if you followed this band and loved this band, it is quite a shocking blow, because he's the first member of the group's original lineup to go. We lost Eric Haydock, who was the founding bass player of the Hollies.
Oh, wow.
You know, we lost him yesterday at the age of 75. Details are still not fully in, but, you know, he was a bass player, a technical bass player that was considered to be as good as, if not better than, Paul McCartney that mm-hmm. early on. But the thing is, he left the Hollies in 1966 simply because he didn't like the way their management was dealing with the group's finances. So he was forced out of the group, and suddenly he disappears from a history that really took off just after his departure. But now that's a hard one to swallow because it was just very sudden to hear it today. Yeah. So,
well, and also Peggy Young, longtime partner. And were they married? Were she yes. and Neil Young married? They were.
Yeah. Unfortunately, she's the woman that Neil Young left when she had cancer for Daryl Hannah.
Right. So, she died this week as well, and she had a career of her own. And I've got to admit, I don't know that much about her. I know she was a folk singer, and I know I've heard some of her stuff, but you're probably a lot more familiar with it than I am. Talk a little bit about what she brought.
Well, the thing is that most importantly, she's the one who created the Bridge program for children.
And they did a ton of benefit concerts for the Bridge.
Right.
Sure.
Because unfortunately, you know, her children with him, it was autism, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she's quite the philanthropist. And funnily enough, she performed not that long ago at Joe's Pub with Richard Barone. So, it doesn't matter how, quote, big the name is. You know, when you have somebody of that kind of stature that does so many good things, it makes it harder to digest knowing, I hate to say it, the backstory with her and Neil Young's marriage coming to quite the ending. It just kind of makes me stop and scratch my head about him for all the great things that he's done. That was a real son of a bitch thing to do.
Yeah.
No matter what the circumstances might have been, no. You stay by the person that you have been with for however many years when they're ill. I'm sorry. That's just me. I don't mean to be preachy.
But how many times have we talked about people that we respect in the music business who are assholes personally? So he's in good company there.
This is very, very true. But also, we lost an incredibly talented, funny man, the brother of Albert Brooks. We lost Bob Einstein, a.k.a. – well, known to most people, most of the quote, younger generation is Super Dave Osborne and now Marty Funkhauser from Curb Your Enthusiasm. But I was introduced to him when he was Officer Judy on the Smothers Brothers show.
Yeah.
Talk about the dumbest cop you've ever seen. Just brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Brilliant.
Yeah, and I remember, I mean, the Super Dave Osborne character was brought to the fore by John Biner on the TV show Bizarre, which was a Showtime show back in the early 80s. And of all of the people that were on that show, he's really the only one that came out of that stable and ended up, you know, becoming bigger. I mean, John Biner was fine, and he did more stuff after that, but really not that much. Bob Einstein, as you said, I mean, all the way up to and through Curb Your Enthusiasm, he was always working, he was always producing stuff, and he was always coming up with new ideas. I mean, the Super Dave character was built out of a kind of a parody of a guy who was like the super stuntman back in the late 70s and early 80s, a guy named Dar Robinson. And you know, because of his popularity, Bob Einstein saw that and said, oh, I can make a character of the inept, you know, superhero kind of stuntman who fails at everything he does and always gets just brutalized and killed, you know, trying to do these stunts. And it was great. And he was always back the next week with no explanation. You know, it's just like, oh, Super Dave's here. And like Officer Judy, that was part of the charm of it, is it's just like, whatever happens, happens, and he'll be fine, and he'll be back next week.
Right. I mean, he was great at being a professional doofus.
Yep, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he also recently did Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Jerry Seinfeld, and it's, as you might imagine, it's fantastic. So if you want to see a little bit more of what Bob Einstein did right near the end of his life, go check that out. And of course, he's being the kvetch and arguing through the entire thing, but it's all a bit. It's all a character.
And of course, the last one, but talk about a busy week for the Grim Reaper, the captain.
Yeah.
Daryl Dragon, as in Captain Antonio. There's only one other captain, and that would be sensible. And God forbid. We love that man. He's another one who was shockingly abandoned when he first became ill by his very longtime wife, Tony Tennille. Did not know that originally, but not a pretty story, because he didn't even know she was divorcing him.
Right.
Here's a guy whose career goes back to, I believe, the late 60s, early 70s by playing keyboards for the Beach Boys. You know, and his father was a fairly respected composer and conductor, Carmen Dragon, I believe. And how many years did Daryl Dragon manage to carve out a career just under the, you know, the moniker, the captain, with one song written by Neil Sedaka that set him for life?
Yeah, right, right. And he, for a long time, back when I lived in Central Florida, he lived, I think, in South Florida, maybe in the Keys, and used to do the tour every year where he'd go through the state of Florida just playing little clubs and little things like that. And he would pack these places. People loved the guy because I never saw him personally because I was too young at that point. But he was one of those people that everybody had a story about. And they'd say, yeah, we saw him at this little club. And then he hung out afterwards and signed autographs and talked to everybody and just was that guy. His persona that he built was actually built out of him. You know what I mean? So that sort of laid back, easygoing guy that you saw as part of the captain and Tennille was really who he was. He just was a great, talented keyboardist on top of it.
Right. It was a very natural sense of being. He didn't have to play up to being a character.
Right.
Pure and simple. One last thing that I want to go back and touch on is, because we did talk about all that political stuff, but the little brouhaha this week with Mitt Romney, I think making his foray into the 2020 campaign. Mm-hmm. I don't think there can be any misinterpretation of his intentions, but you know, him, quote, calling out Donald Trump for the, how many times now has he done that? I don't know. It just seems like it's an ignoble move rather than a noble one, because you know, he tried it once before during the campaign, but didn't run. Where has he been all this time?
Yeah, right. Through all of this, where's the? It just sounds like Bob Dole. Where's the outrage? But it's true. Where has this been, and why does it come out now? And there's no explanation of that either.
So I will tell you right now. I think that's a smokescreen. That's loudly going to say, I'm your only hope, because I will restore the dignity of the Republican Party. Well, I'm sorry, right? At this particular time, much like with the Democrats, the word dignity and Republican are mutually exclusive.
Yeah. And everything that Mitt Romney does sounds contrived. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. I can't get inside his head. But every time I hear him speak, it sounds contrived.
Right. There is not one shred of sincerity in that man's body. Not a chance. It just doesn't work.
And he foisted Guitar Center on an unsuspecting public. So for that alone.
Well, that's why I shop only with musician's friends.
Damn right. Oh, and the boutique guitar shops, of course. We got to give some love to the boutique guitar shops.
Exactly. Mom and pop stores, always, yep. always.
Definitely, definitely. But yeah, and so what happens with him, who knows? But at least, again, it's easy to see through so much of this stuff, and it's stunning that more people don't. But getting away from that and getting back, you know, into the musical bit for just a minute, because there's a guy that you introduced me to and introduced our audience to a good couple of years ago when an album by an artist called Nesrock came out. And now we have another one, but the name isn't really Nesrock. Talk a little bit about Chris Corzine.
Right. Nesrock is just Corzine backwards.
Yeah, right.
And he is an absolute master of power pop in the way that we like our power pop. You know, you can throw out all of the comparisons and the cliches, you know, the big star, Beatles, REM, you know, kind of hooky stuff. So what? He does it well. He's a master of it. And he has a new album out, and it's his second full-length album. It's self-titled. It's just simply called Nesrock. And what can I say? It's, you know, the first album for this year, even though I heard it not too long ago in 2018. Still, it's the first offering for 2019 that I would like people to check out. The review is up right now on MusicTap, But the reason we should talk about this is because of what it contains. And the most important thing is that the first, you know, the first track that I pulled out, of course, was one of the singles from this album, Angie Please, which was an unreleased song written by two of, well, my favorite people in the world, let alone two of my favorite musicians, Jody Stevens and Van Doren. Hey. Chris Corson recorded a version of that with, drumroll please, Mr. Doren singing backing vocals. And plus, you know, his Cracker Jack studio band includes Dennis Dykin of the Smithereens and another pop master that we've talked about, Chris Bolger, who's an amazing singer, songwriter, guitarist, you know. Just fantastic, absolutely fantastic. He breathes a life into this song that is just exciting and he made it his own, especially if you don't know the original track, if you never heard the original demo, which has lingered in the vaults for many years. And the other track that I really, I mean, I don't want to go overboard, but, you know, here it comes. There's a track called Imagine That. It's a really beautiful song, first of all. It's very lush. It has some chilling slide guitar figures on it, and splitting the vocals rather than singing just backups is another one of my favorite people slash artists, the incredible Vicki Loveland, she of Loveland Doren fame.
Yeah, right.
You know, anything she puts her voice on, you better be paying attention, because God, can she sing.
So come all you idealists that are losing.
So, you know, this is an album that it's, you sit down and you go, thank God, because people are still making this kind of music. And there's not going to be any kind of comparison. Well, it's a certain age that you are that you do that. No, it's because you have the talent, the ability, the skill to execute. And simply put, the new self-titled Nesrock album, that's N-E-Z-R-O-K, is one that you have to sit down and listen to, because it's exactly what you want in power pop. I don't want to use the word power pop, but I will, because if you say pop, I don't want it being equated with something that's on the charts, you know, because whatever is on the charts is vile.
Yeah, right. Especially so, now. And I want to say something else about Vicki Loveland, because you brought her up in connection with this. And not only does she have a voice that commands that you listen to it, as you so rightly put it, but I am lucky enough to have her as a Facebook friend, and she is one of the wittiest and sweetest people that I've run into online in a very long time. She's just, you know, we've never met in person. I bet she's an absolute joy to be around.
The answer is affirmative and then some.
Yeah.
Absolutely magnificent. I love her to death. I love Van Doren to death. Two of the most wonderful people on the planet, period.
Good, good deal. So Nesrock, the new one, a new self-titled album out from Chris Corson. So check that out. You said there's a review on Music Tap?
Yes, indeed.
Outstanding. Yes. So that'll be up there for you to check out now. And again, before we get to In Our Heads, more stuff flying our way, because what's happening on MTV now?
All right, apart from that reprehensible show that we talked about called Made in Staten Island, which is just such a farce, and I mean a farce, this is like a really – and I know this is going to sound like an oxymoron – an even lower-ranked bastard child of Mob Wives, there's a new show called Lindsay Lohan's Beach Club. Now, I don't know about you, John.
Just the name itself is brilliant.
Were you clamoring and wondering, you know, in your spare time while you weren't playing guitar, just sitting there thinking, I wonder what Lindsay Lohan's up to? Is she still on drugs? Is she still dating men? Is she still dating women? Is she stripping? Is she now a Muslim? You know, what's her deal? Well, you know what, John? You can rest your mind. Put yourself at ease because she has a new show on MTV. I guess it's based around her finding the right people to run her new nightclub, whatever the hell you want to call it, in Mykonos.
In Mykonos.
As she said in the commercial, boss bitch, like that.
Oh, God. Talk about contrived.
What? Yeah, I know I'm asking for trouble in asking this question, but what the fuck is this world coming to?
Is there more cocaine out there than I thought there was? Because...
I think so.
Somebody's been hoovering some serious schneef. I don't even know what to make of any of that. But yeah, there it is. It's on MTV and you can check that out. We've been doing a lot of a binge watching of whatever. And, you know, just to kind of keep our minds again sharp and solid and away from the rest of the world entering in as much as it has been. But went through most of the new season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Netflix. And it continues to be a pretty damn entertaining little show. I really like it. Obviously, this doesn't come out of nowhere. That show is a huge hit, but I think it's earned it. It's one of the few that gets to that status, and you watch it and you go, yeah, they put some thought into this. They really did.
Oh, I know why you like it.
Why? Okay. Yeah. Duh. Because they're all Jews. Yeah. And it is a little strange to see one of the more famous Arabs in Tony Shalhoub playing the head of a Jewish family in New York. But still, you know, he pulls it off pretty well.
And the fact that the woman who actually plays Mrs. Is it pronounced Maisel or Maisel?
Maisel.
Maisel. Okay. She's a shiksa, actually.
Really?
She's not one of the not one of our people. So, you know. I'm just throwing that out there.
She pulls it off very, very well. And the characters are charming without being stupid. And, you know, it sets a tone. It's totally unrealistic in that, you know, in 1959, you're not going to see a woman from her neck of the woods doing what she does in this show. But if you can go along and suspend disbelief, you're going to have a good time. And I'll tell you something else. The car porn in this TV show, that's my jam, man. I mean, tail fin cars, that if the world was full of nothing but cars from 1955 to 1961, I would be a happy human being. And that's, I mean, the show is now in 1959. So in one of the episodes this time around, they spent a good deal of time riding in a 1957 Plymouth convertible. I was trying to, you know, it was distracting my attention away from the show because I'm just going, damn, that thing is gorgeous. So if you're into that kind of thing, watch it.
Well, then one, we got to send you down to Cuba, SA.
Yeah, damn right. Oh, love to.
Number one. And number two, call me when they have an Imperial LeBaron on.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a 59 Dodge that keeps showing up time and time again. There's a bunch of old Chrysler products in it. So I'm sure it's only a matter of time before they get around to the Imperial. Oh, there's also a 56 Belvedere that runs through it a lot.
If there ain't no DeSoto, forget it.
I'll let you know when I see one.
I'm just telling you right now, Fenneman, because they were, of course, a big, big advertiser with You Bet Your Life.
Oh, so, right. You know? That's right. And my first car was a 1956 DeSoto Firedome.
You're shitting me, right?
No.
Serious?
Yeah, that was my first one. My second one was a 57 Plymouth Belvedere two-door hardtop.
Fucking A.
I've had some great cars, man.
The best I could do is my first car that I bought myself with my money was a 69 Cutlass with a Landau roof. It was an ugly forest green with the white, well, at this point, gray Landau roof.
Yeah, those are great cars, though. And they only came in two colors. You either got a gray one or a green one, so.
It was a fucking tank is what it was.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but a good-looking tank at that. So, yeah, we will definitely get into talking about the car porn before too very long. But, yeah, that's been fun. Brian Regan has a new kind of, I guess, sort of Seinfeld-inspired show that's also on Netflix where he does bits of stand-up interspersed with playing out what happens in the stand-up routines. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's well worth the watch. And the first episode was hysterically funny. And one more Letterkenny thing. They have one of the characters, a very talented comedian by the name of K. Trevor Wilson, is on a Netflix show that's called Comedians of the World. And they do every country they want to, I guess. And they feature comedians from that country at the Montreal Comedy Festival. And so, of course, he's in the Canadian part of it. And he plays, I mean, his onstage persona is very different from his Letterkenny character of Squirrely Dan, but his stand-up is brilliant. It's really funny.
I'm going to be keeping an eye on you this year, mister. And if you start slipping up and pronouncing things like oot,
yeah.
We're going to have a situation.
Well, you know, I'll try to lay off on the Degrassi Junior High reruns then.
Wait just a minute. That is the one time, my God, the one time I will go to bat for our putrid neighbors to the north. Because, A, the Zit Remedy was a great band. I'll get all one song.
Yeah.
Two, it's a travesty that Joey Jeremiah and Caitlin never really worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Even though in Degrassi, The Next Generation, they finally did get together. But again, it didn't work out. And three, Degrassi Junior High / Degrassi High was the staple of my afternoons. Every night when I got home from college, we would watch it religiously, right before we'd watch Jeopardy.
Okay. And, of course, they foisted Drake on an unsuspecting public.
Oh, but he was just Jimmy the Cripple.
Yeah. Okay. that's true.
Aubrey Graham, as his name goes, who was a nice bar mitzvah boy, and he was raised very well in the shul system, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he was a bar mitzvah boy, no two ways about it. He was just a cripple. He got shot by some loony kid, took a bullet in the back. He went down for the count. That's the end of that. I thought, well, I'm saying, you know. But he was just Aubrey Graham, nothing else.
I'll try to stay out of Canada as much as I can. So that brings us to, I believe, we've got one more thing to talk about, at least in the social and apolitical parts of this, because the nonsense fight over the wall and the budget and all of that crap, we know where this is going. There's going to be plenty of time to go over that. But the employment figures came out for the last quarter. And again, you know, whoever you want to blame or thank or whatever, go ahead and do it. It doesn't make any difference. But more people are working, and they're working for more money, and it's about damn time.
That's the one thing that I have found very, very interesting throughout the Trump administration is that the trajectory of unemployment keeps getting lower and lower and lower. And I'm heartened by that. Certainly, I have seen people switching jobs with a lot more, and I'm not minimizing it by any stretch, with a lot more ease than they would have previously, because I wanted to change jobs during the Obama administration, and I didn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't. You know, nobody was hiring at a price that would be livable, let alone not insulting. We're talking about the bare minimum, and, you know, you get to a certain age and point where you can't go backwards.
Yeah.
You know? So I will find this an interesting – how this unfolds will obviously take some time. Is it something to be championed? Will this be a big plus that helps Donald Trump? Will this be – is this a smoke screen? I mean, I don't think the figures can lie. I don't think. How he spins it, how his administration spins it for the, you know, pleading the case, as it were,
yeah,
for him in his second administration. We can only see. If it keeps going the way it's going, though, it's really, really positive. And I don't believe that for one moment that, again, a claim made baselessly and blankly by Ocasio-Cortez of, you know, more people are working, but they're working two jobs and they can't afford to make ends meet. That's not the case in every case. So that's a that's just a blind statement used as a smokescreen, typical of communists slash disciples of Bernie Sanders and of course, Scientologists. Because if you've ever noticed, and if you ever want to do a compare and contrast, the way that the Bernie Sanders people, the way the Bernie bros and hoes go about doing things, their attack is taken from the blueprints of Scientology's attack on people.
Sure.
Who say anything negative about them.
Yeah.
Except they're even more vindictive. Scientologists only go after ex-Scientologists. The Sandinistas go after anybody and everybody.
Right. Yeah. And whether or not they're attacked. And that's, you know, not again, to take any of the onus off of Scientology, because fuck all of those people. But they go after people, as you said, who leave Scientology and anybody who criticizes them, especially journalists. So, yeah, with the Bernie bros, it's anybody who doesn't agree with them. And it's just so insufferable. But, yeah, so...
I just want to say one thing about that, by the way. There was another group that didn't like it if you didn't agree with them. You know what they were called? They were called Nazis.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Enough.
All right. Well, we've been waiting to get to this in our heads since we did the last one, as we always seem to do. And we kind of edged into this toward the end of our discussion last time around, because we got started by talking about having music land on you from an unsuspected source, like hearing it in a TV commercial or seeing it in a movie or hearing, you know, music playing in the background in a movie and seeking that out. And where the conversation wended its way around to was music that came from a band that you generally don't like, or from an artist that you generally stay away from, and yet that one time they knock it out of the park and they give you a song like the one that I came up with was Soul Asylum, and the song that they did called The Break.
I got bars on my windows and lines on my face. I can't compete in this race. For God's sake, I'm gonna make my break clean. If you ever give me a break, I'm gonna make my break clean.
But it's a great song, and the only place it ever showed up was on the soundtrack to the movie So I Married an Axe Murderer. And it's a great piece of music. But it's the only thing Soul Asylum did that I have any use for at all. And I even saw them live one time. They opened up. This is how little respect, I guess, I personally have for Soul Asylum, because I watched this happen and laughed at it. They were opening for Cheap Trick, and it was a fairly small show. It was an arena show of maybe 10,000 people, but it was one of those that Cheap Trick kind of added to a tour about 5 or 6 years ago, and saw them, and they came out and opened, and they were just... they were lifeless, and I mean, even their music is kind of draggy, but the stage presence was nothing. Cheap Trick knocked it out of the park, but Soul Asylum is the opener. They were just so dull, and halfway through it, even people who applauded when they took the stage started yelling Freebird at them, mocking them, and here's how lame they are. They started to play Freebird, and it was only when the audience started booing roundly that they stopped and went back to playing their own stuff. So, like I said, I have no use for Soul Asylum, but that song, The Break, is just an ass kicker. So I'll hand that one back over to you. Who are some bands that you just, bands or solo artists that you don't like all that much, but there's that one tune they do that you just really dig?
That's kind of an interesting one, because I can easily go off on a torrent of bands and artists that I just don't like, period. All right, let me start with this, because I'll go lighter to heavier, I'm sure, as the wheels turn. But
yeah.
I'm not a fan of top 40 pop by any stretch of the imagination, and I certainly blame American Idol and its beginnings as being part of why the music industry plummeted the way it did. But there's something really wonderful about Kelly Clarkson's Since You've Been Gone. It's catchy, it's hooky, it's memorable, it sticks in your head.
And all you'd ever hear me say is how I picture me with you. That's all you'd ever hear me say. But since you've been gone, I can't breathe for the first time. I'm so moving on, yeah, yeah. Thanks to you.
I mean, there's just no two ways about it. Now, this is not any kind of, it's not that I don't like her. It's just that that's not my kind of music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm going to extend the olive branch in that sense. But it's a great song. Okay. Now we start to think a little more, work our way backwards. I hate boy bands. I wish nothing but death upon boy bands. But I Want It That Way by the Backstreet Boys was a really good song.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
You know, it stuck in your head, and you just, again, if a song sticks in my head, it must be doing something right. You know, that's, I think that has to be part of the criteria, you know?
Yeah. It's the same way for me, because even though, I mean, my own disdain for Bon Jovi goes back not only to him and the fact that music is so pablum and street level or surface level, but the fact that I had a girlfriend when I was in high school who was a total psychotic and she loved him. So that didn't help either. But even with all of that, and with the fact that I hate every single one of his hits, save for one, I can't kick in the teeth the song She's a Little Runaway. I kind of like that song. It's got a decent groove, and there's a little bit more to it than Johnny used to work on the dock. Ugh.
Well, you know, it's funny, because like you, I can't stand Bon Jovi. But It's My Life was a good song because it didn't sound like Bon Jovi.
Yeah, right.
That's the thing. It didn't sound like it, you know? You know, it's funny. It's a question like this that you can ponder all day long and answer all day long. But when it's actually posed, it's harder to think on your feet, because I'm trying to be much more specific than my usual swinging the bat at every piece of glass in the china shop, you know?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, a band I really don't like, and they've just – and it's a theory of mine anyway, because I'm so anti-90s to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But I really – and I could never, and I've had this conversation with other people, I can't put my finger on why I dislike them so much, but I can't stomach Weezer.
Yeah.
Weezer really irritate me on every level, and I want to hurt them, you know? It's nothing personal. I just want to beat each one of them with a bat. And those songs are so fucking precious and pretentious and fey, and yet ooh-you, I Go Dressed Like Buddy Holly is really catchy.
Not bad. And like I said last week when we were talking about the movie thing, they did a song at the end of one of the Kevin Smith movies. I think it was Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, called Suzanne. And oh, you know what? No, it wasn't either. It was Mallrats. It's at the end of Mallrats, and Suzanne is a killer song. But yeah, most of the stuff that they do is so frat boy cutesy, and it makes me want to kick him in the teeth, just like you said.
Right. It's like the contrived contradiction to grunge, because they appeared at the same time that grunge was still a going concern and moneymaker.
Right.
You know, they had that heavy sound to it, you know, with the heavy guitars mixed in, but they looked so ultra nerdy.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned Neil Sedaka a while ago, and not only do, you know, when it comes to Neil Sedaka, I can't think of a single thing that I really like from him except for one song. And the funny thing is, it's the one song that is so universally hated. And yet, I'll listen to Bad Blood anytime, any day.
I don't understand.
Liked Laughter in the Rain. I hated all the earlier stuff. I hated Breaking Up His Heart to Do whichever version he did. The original, you know, 60s version or the remake in the 70s, you know. Just all of those. He just wrote such twee stuff.
Yeah, I know.
He wrote stuff for the Monkees that, of course, Davey got saddled with, unfortunately.
Right.
And it just made me look at Davey and go, oh, Davey, Davey, Davey.
You poor, poor man.
You know, the only Neil you should be singing is Diamond.
Yeah.
That's, you know, because Davey knocked it out of the park with not one but two Neil Diamond songs, Look Out, Here Comes Tomorrow, and A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You.
Yep. Well, so, see, Neil Diamond's another artist. And the problem with Neil Diamond for me is that I don't know that I could think of a song that Neil Diamond did that I really like. I just, for whatever reason, whether it's his voice or whether it's the arrangements and the music, there's something about him. I would rather listen, and I'm serious about this, I'm not using this just as a slam, I would rather listen to Neil Sedaka. I would rather listen to Barry Manilow than listen to Neil Diamond. But I, you know, he doesn't fit the category for me because I really don't think there's one song of his that I could single out as my one exception to the rule.
Well, it's interesting. You just, let's see. Neil Diamond, Neil Sedaka, Barry Manilow. Interesting, John. Don't you kick them?
Yeah, right. I'll be coming out any day now. No.
That dick. The important factor.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, they're all Jews, too.
That's what it's all about. Haven't you figured this out yet? Why you're in radio? Why I make music? Because it's in our blood.
That's right. It's performing has always been there.
Exactly. With Neil Diamond, forget it. I mean, I love everything that he did until Song Sung Blue.
Yeah.
That's impardonable. I'm sorry. That is impardonable. Unpardonable? Impardonable? Whatever it is.
Either way.
I don't forgive him. You know? I just, I don't forgive him.
I got another one. I got another one for you. Okay. Bob Seger, Kathmandu. Probably the only one that I'll listen to.
Oh, I got it. A band that I've railed against my whole life. And I mean railed against my whole life. Like, I wouldn't date a certain woman that I had known and liked quite a lot because I found out she was really into them. The Grateful Dead.
Oh, you're not a Dead fan? Okay, yeah.
I never liked the Dead, nothing about them. I hate their followers, their fans. But Box of Rain is a fucking great song.
Mm-hmm. See, I like Ripple.
And Jerry Garcia had one solo song called Birdsong that was just phenomenal. You know that one with the acoustic guitar riff.
Anyone who sings a tune so sweet is passing by. Sunshine, sing, cry in the dark, fly through the night. Don't cry now. Don't you cry. Don't you cry anymore.
So, you know, as well we know, even a broken clock.
It's right twice a day. Yeah, and going back to Bob Seger for just a minute, even more so than Kathmandu, Betty Lou's Getting Out Tonight is another one that I'll, you know, anything where Bob Seger's not being a whiny little punter, I will listen to him. But when he gets into the wallowing in self-pity and, oh, life's so hard for me being a rock star, I want to just throttle him.
You know what? Oh, hell, I'll go for the big one right now. John Lennon.
Yeah.
So I can't stand Lennon. I can't stand Lennon, you know. But Number 9 Dream is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that song, if you don't like that song, there's something wrong with you.
Exactly. Well, a good list all around. And of course, we're looking for more of your comments in the comments section on this thing. And next time around, we'll do even more. We'll, of course, have a brand new In Our Heads for you and all of that. And in the meantime, you got anything else coming up on Music Tap this week to talk about? Or is it all about Nez Rock?
This week is Nez Rock. I'll be getting back into the proverbial swing later on in the week. Hopefully get something up there about a particular box set by a particular band who is no longer with us. But it came out a couple of months ago, but really hasn't had that much exposure, mainly because, A, it wasn't cheap to get hold of, and B, I don't think it was as universally released here as it was in the rest of the world, because the copy that I got was, quote, manufactured in the Czech Republic, which I'm a little, sketchy on.
Huh, okay.
But, it's the REM at the BBC box set.
Oh, nice.
So let's we'll tap into that finally, because that's a lot of information to go through. It's something like, 7 discs in one DVD. So
fantastic. Well, we will see you then. And of course, you can follow me during the week on YouTube. You just go to YouTube and watch the Inside the Box show. We're there for you every single weekday at 11 o'clock Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Central Time. Or you can, of course, watch the reruns later. But if you watch it during the week, then while it's on, you can also call into the show and let us know what's going on with you there. We've got more fun stuff for you every single day. And Rob Ross, Happy New Year again. Let's again, keep the faith for 2019 being a much better year all the way around. And I'll talk to you next week.
Yes, indeed, my brother. And to all our friends and fans, Happy New Year to you all. Thank you very much.